Weighing in, I call a healthy conflict. So, but before you can get to the healthy conflict, you have to have trust. Trust is the foundation of all leadership. It's the foundation of every healthy team. It's the foundation of every leadership is trust. And when I say trust, we know about trust, but I'm talking about the vulnerability-based trust. I'm talking about being vulnerable of, hey, you're better at this than I am. I need some help with this. Being vulnerable to others, when you create that trust, when you care about each other, you have earned the right to have healthy conflict. And that's the way in, right? We're having healthy conflict because you either have one thing, you have artificial harmony. You go into a meeting where everybody just sits there with their thumbs up and nobody says a word. That's artificial harmony. Or you have a food fight on the other end where people are being abusive. But we have to have healthy conflict, and you can't have healthy conflict till you have trust. Then when you get that way in, then you have the buy-in. So you have commitment, everybody committed to where we're headed and what we're doing. And then it's mutual accountability. And that's peer-to-peer accountability. This is what we decided. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And we're accountable to each other. And that creates results.
The First Responder Liaison Network is proud to present to you the Kitchen Table Podcast. Where our guests come share their stories, their perspectives, and their message, talking all things leadership. Now here's your host, Berlin Mazza.
Good afternoon and welcome everyone to The Kitchen Table. The Kitchen Table is brought to you by the First Responder Liaison Network. The network is organized for the development, implementation, and ongoing support of mentorship and professional development programs, inspiring our youth and young adults to mature into engaged civic leaders and resilient community sentinels. Music and graphics are brought to you by Kai Elephant Productions. Who is your number one team? Is it the team that you are on or the team that you lead? Today, we're talking about making excellence a priority. Right now, today, not in what we do, but in every single thing that we do. If you don't make excellence a priority right now, when are you? And today on the show, we have Fire Chief Matthew Vinci's Leadership Challengee, Fire Chief Dennis Doan. Chief Doan was hired as the Fire Chief of Gig Harbor Fire and Medic 1 in March of 2021. Chief Doan's fire service career began with the City of Boise in April of 1991. He served as the City of Boise Fire Chief from February 2008 to March 2020. Chief Doan is the past president of the Southwest Idaho Fire and EMS Chiefs and the Professional Firefighters of Idaho. He also served as a trustee on the Boise School District Board. Chief Doan founded the Idaho Fallen Firefighters Foundation and built the Idaho Fallen Firefighters Memorial. Chief Doan currently serves on the board of the Western Fire Chiefs, the Washington Fire Chiefs, the Pierce County Fire Chiefs Association, and the South Sound 911 Public Safety Communications Operations Committee. He is also a member of the Gig Harbor Midday Rotary, Gig Harbor Chamber of Commerce, and the International Association of Firefighters, IAFF, Local 3390. Chief Doan has a bachelor's degree in business administration from the Northwest Nazarene University, an associate degree in fire science from Boise State University, and is a graduate of the National Fire Academy's Executive Fire Officer Program. Chief Doan has been awarded the Chief Fire Officer designation from the Center for Public Safety Excellence in 2019 and 2022. The focus of the fire district in the next several years will be building bond projects using funds, approximately $80 million approved by our taxpayers in August of 2022, looking for ways to increase efficiency for the residents of our district and mentoring the next generation of leadership for Gig Harbor Fire and Medic One. Chief Doan and his wife, Sean, live in Canterwood and enjoy spending time with family and friends, golfing, and travel. They have three children, Dustin in Denver, Colorado, Aiden in Boise, Idaho, and Skyler in Gig Harbor. So with that, good afternoon, Chief. Thank you so much for joining today and taking Chief Vinci's challenge here on the Kitchen Table. How are you?
Great. Yeah, thank you. Chief Vinci is a great friend of mine. I love him dearly. I just had dinner at his house in Vashon Island this weekend. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's funny you say that because I told Chief Vinci this, and I started my career on Vashon. And I owe him a visit. And in fact, it was on my calendar to visit him tomorrow. Yeah, not today, tomorrow. That got changed, but I'm going to be visiting him sometime this summer. I understand that you golf and you live on Canterwood, yes?
Yeah. Cantorwood is a golfing community in Gig Harbor. Yeah, my wife and I belong to the club there. We didn't golf much when we moved from Boise to Gig Harbor, but then we living on a golf course. We bought a golf cart and we started golfing, and here we go. My handicap's dropped about 12 points.
Oh
And
my gosh, that's awesome. Mine's raised about 12,
Well, it
but
feels like
who's
it's
keeping
going up
track?
lately.
That's awesome. Well, good. We have perfect time to be trending in that direction as the summer comes around. So with that being said, thank you again, Chief, for joining us on the kitchen table today. And before we get going, do you mind sharing just a little bit about Chief Doan? I know started in Idaho, and here you are in the Pacific Northwest.
Boy, I could talk the whole hour or two just with that question. But I was born and raised in Boise, Idaho. Worked my 30 years for the Boise Fire Department in Idaho. I was really outdoorsman, hunting, fishing, backpacking, mountain biking, raced mountain bikes for a lot of years, really involved in our union, in politics in Idaho and nationally with the IFF. And national elections and local elections. Loved my career in Boise and all the leadership stuff that I did there. We had a new mayor elected in Boise, and I was asked to leave, and I retired. And I was blessed enough to come to Gig Harbor. I was recruited to come here, and it couldn't have worked out better for both of us. That was 3 years ago right now, and I love it here, and now my wife and I are spending time in the Puget Sound. I'm learning to fish for king salmon out on the
Oh.
out in the ocean, and so that's fun.
Yeah.
I'm going Friday and doing that, and we golf
Nice.
a lot, and we're just really enjoying the Pacific Northwest and the Puget Sound. We love now going to Kraken games and Mariner
Nice.
games, and
Yes.
we're just diving in, and we love it.
Yes. Oh, what a
Yeah,
great
so
time.
blessed.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, with the Kraken, obviously, new franchise here doing so well. Mariners, number one in the AL West. I mean, talk about a great time. So thank you so much for sharing a little, and let's just dive right into this leadership conversation today, because there's a lot that I know we're going to unpack. But the first thing is going with what you just said. So you were in Boise, and you said that you more or less retired and then came over to the Pacific Northwest. Can you talk about that transition? Meaning, it wasn't a planned event. It was more it happened, and then you were recruited. Can you talk about sometimes as we navigate, and for the listeners, the topic on leadership, how sometimes things may not happen the way they intended or planned, but talk about that optimism, talk about that plan that you never know would have, yeah, journey that never would have taken place had something not happened. So can you talk a little bit about that? Obviously, you're happy where you're at and that whole journey.
It's to be transparent and open and honest, it was one of the most traumatic events of my life. And I like the way you put it, that you can't always plan things out. And I'd say the story of me becoming fire chief, boy, I didn't have that planned. I never wanted to be a fire chief. And that's a whole story in itself. But what really happened, like I said, is I was the fire chief for 12 years with Mayor Dave Beter. He was a very close friend of mine. I was a lobbyist and president of the Professional Firefighters of Idaho when I met him. I helped him get elected. I was on his campaign team. He appointed me fire chief, and then he lost his election, and the new mayor, and it was very public, asked me to leave. In essence, what she did was she called me in and said, you supported the other mayor, and I said, I totally get it. I'm a big boy. I understood that this conversation was happening. I said, or gonna happen. I said, I'm happy to retire, and I wish we could have just done that, and we could have both walked out and smiled and announced my retirement. But for some reason, she had me come in the next day. I walked into her office with the HR director. They stood there and they slid a piece of paper across and said, here is $50,000, a non-disclosure agreement. You have 2 hours to vacate your office. If you don't sign this non-disclosure agreement, we're going to fire you. And she got up and walked out of the room. And that was literally how it happened. To try to make it as short as possible, I called my wife and I said, meet me at my office. We got to pack my office up. And I got a call about an hour later from while I was packing up my office from my mother and said, "What did you do wrong?" And I said, "What are you talking about, Mom?" And she said, "It's in the news that you're on administrative leave. You must have done something wrong." And I knew at that moment I couldn't sign that non-disclosure agreement because I couldn't tell my side of the story because I did nothing wrong. It was politics. The only thing I did was I endorsed the right candidate for mayor. That person just didn't win. And unfortunately, the new mayor didn't allow me to retire, didn't allow me to celebrate my 30 years. She walked me out the door with 2 hours, and it was humiliating. It was sad. I didn't get to celebrate with all those firefighters that I had known for my whole career. And it was one of the worst days of my life. And then I really struggled finding a job because of that. It followed me. And then Gig Harbor called, and this is where I think your question is more relevant and better. You know, even though that difficult thing happened, even though I went through that, it was public, it was humiliating. I had community members thinking that my own mother thought I did something wrong, and I didn't do anything wrong. Wow. But good things sometimes come out of it, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Would I wish that on anybody? No. But boy, did I land on my feet. Did I get to come to a department? Again, I love Boise Fire Department, 30 years there. I love everybody there. But I also love it here too.
Yes.
It's a night and day. It's not a city fire department. I didn't know how hard being a city fire chief was until I came to be a fire district fire chief.
Mm-hmm.
Totally night and day. The culture here is so amazing and so incredible. Night and day difference. That state, the Boise Fire Department is 18 stations. You know, it's a downtown capital city fire department. And now, mm-hmm. now I'm a fire district with 5 stations, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is so joyful here. And so I got a new opportunity. And though it was hard, I'm excited for the opportunity that I have now. I've moved beyond it. I don't mind talking about it. I don't mind being vulnerable, but at the same time, I've turned the page. I have closed the book on Boise. Still have great fond memories and love it. My parents still live there. My kids still live there.
Yes.
But I'm in Gig Harbor now, and I'm ready to move forward here and do great things here with this great department.
Wow. Well, first of all, thank you so much for sharing vulnerability. We talk quite a bit on this show. And so one thing I'll lean on a little bit is, you know, obviously for the listeners here, you know, emerging leaders, company officers, even battalion chiefs, and new firefighters listening into this, is that time of your life and your career, it didn't define you, meaning you said you were more or less relieved of your duty instantaneously. Like, I can only imagine any one of us listening here today, what would happen if we were demoted, you know, on the spot, fired on the spot, and we could have taken, we all have a choice in what route we take. Obviously, that didn't define you. In fact, it inspired you. I maybe correct me if I'm wrong, and you're at a department now where you may not have known that opportunity had things didn't happen. So I guess it's not even a question. It's talking to those that are listening is, no matter what can happen or does happen to us daily in our organizations, it's how you take that next step moving forward is what's going to define us. And so that's quite a story.
Yeah. I think, you know, I struggle with this a lot. Still thinking back, I feel like in some ways I don't like the word legacy, but I'm going to use it. My legacy in Boise is tarnished because, you know, that's what you think of now. You think of that I resigned before I was being terminated, you know, and I feel like I did some really good things in Idaho as president of the Professional Firefighters of Idaho, as the fire chief of the largest department in the state. I built a state-of-the-art training facility and the partnerships I had with my union and union president. I feel like I had great things, and I feel like that's tarnished. But what I do like is that I get to try to rewrite my story here. Yes. And absolutely. I get to have a new ending. And I didn't want that to be my ending of my story in Boise. And now I get to rewrite it here in Gig Harbor.
That's awesome. So I guess what I'll say here is, talking to an individual listening, say something comes up, they take a promotional exam, don't do well, fail the promotional exam, don't get the promotion they're looking for, maybe passed up on a rule of three, rule of five, whatever it is. Talk to them about, don't worry about it. keep your head up and move forward. I mean, what can you tell those individuals about? It's not the end of your career. It's not the end. It's just there's opportunities around the corner.
Yeah, and it's hard to hear. You know, I was without a job for almost a year, and I had a lot of people just saying, "Hey, don't worry, you got this. Things are going to come around." And after a while, I frankly got a little mad because I'm like, "You don't know that, right? I appreciate your kind words. I love you, and you're being kind to me. But what if it doesn't?" Right.
Yeah.
And I went through that for a while of maybe I'm done being a fire chief. Maybe I don't get to be a fire chief again. And I started pursuing some other things, some leadership. So it's strange. I'm going to give the advice that I got that I didn't like. Right. People were like, "Hang on, you're a good person. You're a good man. You're going to be able to get through this. It's dark right now, but it will be better." And I remember at that time thinking, "You don't know."
Yeah,
it may not. And I started even getting tired of people telling me that. But my advice is, hang on.
There you
you
go.
Can do it. You know, it will get better. I think of some of the darkest days. I went through a divorce and it was hard. It's better now. I'm remarried and I love my wife and my marriage is great. So yeah, we go through those times in our life, whether it's death, whether it's, you know, getting fired publicly, whatever it is. And sometimes it is hard to hold on to that faith that something better is coming.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes it may not.
Yeah.
But what I'm here to say is it did for me, and I hope it will for you, and do your best to hang on. And I just kept looking at myself and saying, what do I want to be? Who do I want to be? And I kept saying, man, I'm a fire chief. I want to end well and I want to end my career well. So I just hung in and kept on applying and Gig Harbor and we found each other and we both needed each other at that time.
We found each other. I love that. We found each other. That's quite the way to look at it. I love that.
Yeah.
So I heard you say something earlier, Chief. Early on, you said, you know, you wasn't really looking to become a fire chief. You were a fire chief. I remember hearing you in a previous podcast talked about how you were union president, I believe. I can't remember the rank. You were company officer, captain, maybe battalion chief. And an opportunity came out to be fire chief. And you were asked to step up and you stepped up. So can you talk about that? Because we talk about that on this podcast. We talk about leaders stepping up. Sometimes if they're not necessarily, we'll say, ready or isn't in their timeline, stepping up sometimes earlier than you would have expected, or someone's asking you to step up because you might be right for a certain role. Can you talk about your experience in stepping up to a role that you weren't necessarily aspiring, but someone said you'd be good at it, you did it, and you wouldn't have taken anything back? Can you talk about that stepping up part of being a leader?
Yeah, I was the state president, the Professional Firefighters of Idaho, the state union president, and I was the lobbyist. And I thought that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be the IFF 7th District Vice President. I was looking at going to Washington, D.C. Harold Schaitberger, the IFF president, was a friend of mine. And Kevin O'Connor, the legislative advisor, was a friend. And I was looking at, am I going to go to Washington, D.C. and work for the IFF? Am I going to try to become the 7th District Vice President? And that's where I was headed and wanted to be. I never had sights of becoming fire chief. In fact, being the state union president, we were fighting the fire chiefs. They were trying to, in Idaho, take away our collective bargaining. And so I was not happy with fire chiefs, right? And
sure.
And our previous fire chief was a good man in Boise, but the mayor was not, and they were fighting us at every turn. So I was in a different mode. And so we get a new mayor elected, and I helped him get elected. I worked on his campaign. The union gave me 3 months off work, and Dave Beter won, and the fire chief before me decides to retire, and the union sent me to meet with the mayor because he was a close friend. And I said, you know, we want to have somebody on the committee. And he's like, well, of course we'd put the union on the committee. And then he's like, well, what about you? And I just laughed and I'm like, no way, fire chiefs are I don't know if I can swear, you know, but I was like, no way. And I spent a lot of time with people and surrounded myself with great people that just said, you know, Dennis, Maybe you can make a difference for firefighters if you'd go in there. I had actually the union attorney was one of the last people that said, where do you think you can make more effect for firefighters and their daily health and safety as union president or as fire chief? And although union presidents have a lot of influence, boy, a fire chief really can.
Yeah.
And I just like, man, I want to make things better for my firefighters. And, that's what convinced me to apply and go through the process and get selected. So it was not where I was headed,
right,
at all, or where I wanted to go, and was not one of my goals. But sometimes you got to. Sometimes the things come to you, and you got to step up and lead.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, step up and lead. And wow, you said something super powerful. So you stepped up simply because you weighed the, like you said, the options, or not the options, but the opportunities to be able to affect positive change in a newer role. So I guess that works for, that relates also to all ranks. Yes. Say a firefighter, you know, aspires to positive change at the crew level, station level. I mean, there comes a time where stepping up to become a company officer, even if it's something that they weren't aspiring for necessarily, because they could have that positive influence on younger firefighters on the crew level, station level. So that works all the way up and down. Yeah. If someone aspires to have positive change, it might be time to step up.
I don't think anybody is ever, you know, quote, ready to be the next job. We all want to be a firefighter a little bit longer and learn more. And then we want to, you know, whatever that next rank, driver operator, company officer, I would say 100% of us would rather spend a little bit more time there to learn and perfect our craft. But those opportunities don't always come in our timing.
Yes,
right? And
agreed.
we have to be ready to step up. And if we're not willing to, then we got to be willing to let others do it and say yes sir to
them.
That's a good
point. That's a good point.
That final jump for me to be fire chief in Boise, I was looking around and I'm like, oh boy, I'm not ready, but I'm ready for the challenge. And I had the support of my union, and the union president, Greg Womack, was the union president the entire time I was there. And he made it, we were great partners, and I loved working with him. And sometimes you just got to step up and do it.
Wow. Step up is what I've heard a few times already. Mm-hmm. Listeners, step up. So is leadership lonely, chief?
Very,
very.
Very.
Elaborate a little bit.
Yeah. And it gets lonelier every step you make. There's only one fire chief, and it gets really, really lonely when you're the only fire chief. You know, I like I said, I grew up in the Boise Fire Department. The guys and girls that were in my recruit academy were my friends. We went hunting and fishing together. We did all of our things together. We had family parties and birthdays. And then when you become chief, you don't get invited anymore. Right.
Yeah.
And it was hurtful. And they didn't, I'm not mad at them. It's the way it is, right? Every rank you go, the harder and lonelier it gets. And so I didn't deal with that well. I wasn't excellent at that. I probably didn't go buddy to boss. I thought I could be Dennis, but I don't get to be Dennis anymore. I'm the fire chief 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Even when I'm golfing at Cannerwood or I'm at the store, I'm Chief Doan all the time. And there's nobody else to talk to about that except other chiefs. And I have a counselor that I go see, and I can talk to her about it.
Yeah.
It is very lonely at the top.
How about other ranks? Like, for example, battalion chief, you know, lonelier than a company officer, or a company officer in a station managing 2, 3, or 4 other firefighters.
Sometimes I think even harder, you know, at least I know I am the tip of the spear. I am the only fire chief. And sometimes you think of a battalion chief or a company officer, they're sandwiched in the middle. That's sometimes I think even harder, right? Because they're living in the firehouse still. And they're probably still going hunting and fishing with the crews.
True.
But they got to be the leader, and they got to wear the gold badge. And sometimes I think a battalion chief is even a harder job to do that. But as we grow, as we move up the ranks, it gets lonelier and lonelier. And we gotta surround ourselves with great friends and family that'll pick us up and dust us off and hug us and tell us they love us.
Yes, I mean, I guess the first thing would be to, first of all, accept that as well, right?
Yeah.
Accept that leadership is lonely. It can be lonely. Mm-hmm. Is lonely. But then navigating in your new role and not trying to continuously fit in the role that you were before. Because if you step up to, we'll say, promote or take on a new role, you're there to take on the new role, not try to fit in the other role. So is first of all, accepting the fact that leadership as you go up is lonely and it can be lonely, but navigating appropriately is what's one of the challenges, but also opportunities in becoming a new leader. Yes.
Yeah. I say, you know, if you want to make everybody happy, then don't be a leader, you know, go sell ice cream. Cause everybody loves the ice cream man, but, not everybody loves a leader and you're not going to make everybody happy. And it's hard because I do want, I do strive or want that. I think this kind of leads me into a little bit, if you don't mind taking a little bit of a left turn that fits here though.
Yes, please.
It's one of the things that has been weighing on me and I've been trying to sort out in my mind for the last few months. And I think, it's probably the number one leadership lesson just as a society and really as a fire service that we need to learn and do better at. And it's something I call first team. I actually got that from Patrick Lencioni. It's not mine. But think about every movie, every kitchen table. We'll talk a little, probably about the kitchen table.
We will later.
what do we look at and what do we celebrate as the great leaders, right? What every movie that you watch, every war movie, it can be a banker movie. What they celebrate the person that sticks up for their team, right? That sticks it to the leader, that those people in leadership don't know what they're doing. They're all idiots. We know better. We celebrate that person that sticks up for their team, their guys or their men or women. And don't hear what I'm not saying. That is very important. And but what we have lost in the United States and leadership and in the fire service is that the most important team, I think it's the last leadership lesson we learn, is not the team that the one we should be the loyalest to or our first team, is the team we're on, not the team we lead. So let's kind of unpack that for a minute.
Yes, please.
Whatever rank you're at. So let's say I'm the fire chief and my command staff, the team they're on, my team, is the number one team. And they each lead a division. When they come to the command staff meeting, their ops is fighting, I don't like that word, but they're advocating for their position of finance and administration. Everybody has logistics. But when we make a decision, leave that room, you have to know that that's your first team and you have to weigh in and you have to buy into that decision. And when you leave there, you have to support it. Now, we've heard a lot of that, you know, support it as a team. But what I'm saying is we need to shift our mind into what's our first team. And that's the team that we're on, not the team that we lead. Because if we all come, no matter what rank we are, we're all on different teams. If we come to those meetings only advocating for ourselves and our division and our people, then it's going to look like Congress does like right now, or the United Nations, where you're only advocating for your division or your thing. And then you go back to your team and you're like, oh, I fought for it, but you know, so-and-so wanted it differently, or the chief or so, and you blame other people to show that you're standing up for your team. So I think it's a new thing that we need to focus off in the fire services. What team are we? And we need to quit raising up leaders and that philosophy that sticking up for your people is the most important thing. Again, don't hear what I'm not saying. We should.
Yes.
But when we leave that room,
yes,
we need to all be on one and we need to quit tearing others down.
Yes. Oh, well, thank you. It makes all the sense in the world. In fact, we were talking about Bill earlier and Bill, we talked about this because this was his concept and philosophy as well. And he used just basically a different terminology, but same concept, is agreeing versus being aligned versus agreement. In this case, and what you're saying, and we talked about sports because Bill and I are both into sports quite a bit, is as a team, and in reference to what you're saying, the parable here is as a team, Like, we don't have to always agree on the play call. We don't have to agree on the scheme. We have to agree in this case on the direction of or the decision that's being made. But when the meeting is over, when the huddle is over, we have to be aligned and moving forward on that play call, in which direction. It's okay to agree, to disagree with the decision. It's okay to disagree with the policy, but we all have to agree, or sorry, we all have to align and move forward together as one unit, because that's, we are all one team. To see success, you got to work as a team. So,
and as a leader, we have to allow people to weigh in, to buy in. So if we're not letting people weigh in, they have to weigh in on the decision. And if you and I, and there's a team of us, four or five people, we're all weighing in. Like, you're telling me why you think, and I'm telling you why I think we ought to, and we all weigh in. You may not get your way, but you had your opportunity, and we all talked and we made a decision, whether maybe even the leader made the decision or we came to consensus. You at least got to weigh in, and you have to weigh in to buy in, and leaders have to allow that. If they just go in and say, this is the way we're going to do it, you didn't get the way in to get the buy-in. You didn't disagree and commit. You got to create that environment. Leaders have to create that environment too.
Oh, well, let's stay there, because I love this. I love this. So leaders have to create the environment for their people to be willing to weigh in, to therefore have buy-in. That's kind of what I heard. And I love that. And Chief Vincey and I talked about this on the show, and we talked about inclusion. We talked about diversity, but what I hear a little bit there is including your people, making sure your people have a voice, making sure your people, first of all, feel comfortable to weigh in, right? How many times have we gone to a meeting where 30 of us, only four people spoke, because only the loudest voice is what everybody heard, but 26 other people, you know, have opinions too. So can you talk about that in terms of what you said? Leaders must create that environment so that everyone has an opportunity and is willing to weigh in and voice their opinions on a subject matter or other.
Yeah. Weighing in, I call a healthy conflict. So, but before you can get to the healthy conflict, you have to have trust. Trust is the foundation of all leadership. It's the foundation of every healthy team. It's the foundation of every leadership is trust. And when I say trust, we know about trust, but I'm talking about the vulnerability-based trust. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about being vulnerable of, hey, you're better at this than I am. I need some help with this. Being vulnerable to others. When you create that trust, when you care about each other, you have earned the right to have healthy conflict. And that's the way in, right? We're having healthy conflict, because you either have one thing, you have artificial harmony. You go into a meeting where everybody just sits there with their thumbs up and nobody says a word.
Yep.
That's artificial harmony. Or you have a food fight on the other end where people are being abusive. But we have to have healthy conflict, and you can't have healthy conflict till you have trust. Then when you get that way in, and then you have the buy-in, so you have commitment. Everybody's mm-hmm. committed to where we're headed and what we're doing. And then it's mutual accountability. And that's peer-to-peer accountability. This is what we decided. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And we're accountable to each other. And that creates results. I just gave you the five dysfunctions of a team by
thank you, Patrick Lencioni.
I'm a consultant for him, so that's probably why I stole that. But that is Patrick Lencioni, and I am totally bought into this. You have to have trust to have healthy conflict, to have commitment, to have peer accountability, and then focus on results. And
I truly believe in that. Thank you so
I
much for that. So what the chief is referring to for those listeners is the five dysfunctions of a team. Correct me if I'm wrong. By the author Patrick, is it Lencioni?
Yeah.
Patrick Lencioni, and he has a few books out there. And what the chief is talking about is that pyramid, if you will, the bottom and the baseline and the foundation of a healthy team, a high functioning team, we'll say, is building trust, right? After mm-hmm. and only after you have that foundation that can you resolve conflict, and then you commit to each other as a team, but you must also hold each other accountable, and then you can focus on the results at the very end. But without that foundation moving up, you won't have a healthy team nor a high functioning team. Thank you. And I was, actually a mentor of mine gave me that book 2 years ago. It's that red book. I know what it is. It's a short read too. It's only less than 200 pages, I think it is. But Patrick Lencioni, awesome author. And I did not know you did consulting work with him. I think I heard you, but we're going to dive into that because very influential individual that person is, obviously. And I'm interested to learn more about that. So do not let me forget. I want to lead a little bit more on that. So speaking of authors and great books, John Maxwell is obviously someone that you've quoted and you've talked about before. And leadership is influence, right? And I've heard you say this. I know John Maxwell says this. If no one's following you, if you don't have any followers, you're by yourself and you're out taking a walk on your own. So can you talk about how leadership is an influence, good or bad, right? I mean, you could be a negative, impactful leader and you're still a leader, right? So talk about leadership as influence.
Yeah, that, you know, I'm stealing this from John Maxwell and his 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, but I just like the way he puts that leadership is influence, nothing less, nothing more. And you're just, you look at your title, you look at, you know, somebody comes in and says, I have five bugles, I have a gold badge, I'm the chief. Don't listen to those titles. You need to look at their influence. What influence do they have on others? Because the title will only take you so far. And you're going to either influence people in a positive direction or a negative direction. And the real leaders is not somebody with the title. It's the having somebody that is intentionally following behind them on their vision on where they're going. So I say I'm the fire chief and I'm the leader of the Gig Harbor Fire Department. But if nobody is following me in the direction we're going, then like you said, I'm just out taking a walk by myself.
Yeah.
And so we have to remember that we can have a positive or a negative influence on people. And we have to have followers following with us, behind us in our vision and where we want to go.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. It's simply put. Is the people that you influence, people that are following you, good or bad, is what measures whether you are a leader or not. The next piece, Chief, I love. Is the chief responsible for your morale?
Oh, I love tackling this one. Because don't we hear this everywhere? Yeah,
yes,
everywhere
we
go is our morale is horrible. You know, and our fire chief and the morale. And we like to, as firefighters, we like to blame the fire chief for our morale. And again, don't hear what I'm not saying. It is my job as the fire chief to give you the tools that you need to do your job. It is my job to make sure you're healthy and safe and that you have the tools and the training to do your job. It's my job to get you the equipment. It's my job to do those things. But I would say most every fire department in this nation, whether they're a good chief or a bad chief, at the end of the day, it's not my job if you are happy or not. Again, don't hear what I'm not saying.
Correct. Yeah.
Look in the mirror. Look at yourself, because I'd say most fire departments around here are great fire departments that are well-equipped, well-trained. And if your morale is that bad, maybe it's you. Right. Maybe
Agreed.
it's you and not your fire chief, because you can have the worst fire chief in the world and your company or your battalion can be the best and the happiest and the most excellent. And
Agreed.
You can come to work with a positive attitude, whether that fire chief or that mayor or that council or whatever that is, they could be horrible, but you make the decision at the end of the day. And I don't think it's the fire chief's job or responsibility for your morale. The only person it is you. And you get up in the morning and you look in the mirror and you get to decide it each and every day. So I hope that comes across in the way
it absolutely does.
I intend it to be.
I think
please
you do.
Don't hear what I'm not saying. Fire chiefs are responsible.
Yes.
And it is my job. But at the end of the day, I can't make you happy.
Absolutely. And no, you portrayed that absolutely excellent. Eric Rossoff was on the show and he's a lieutenant, retired lieutenant, not out of LAPD, but somewhere in California. And I apologize, a friend of mine, I don't even remember where he retired out of. But he talked about how culture change starts one firefighter, one crew at a time. I take that no differently than what you said. Morale change, or morale by itself, begins at the individual level. And it begins at the crew level far long before it goes up to the chain of command to any upper level chief at that. So yes, the chief is responsible for the organization, but every individual is accountable for their own attitude, their own morale. Another piece I want to talk briefly about, Chief, is handling criticism. I know there's a piece there that you wanted to talk about in terms of how you handle criticism, or how you did handle criticism. So as far as for the leaders, can you talk about handling criticism and some of your experiences?
Well, you know, this kind of came to light with me when I was going through a difficult time. And it really comes from a quote by Theodore Roosevelt in Brené Brown's book, when she talks about the man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles. It's the those that are in the arena whose blood, who's marred by blood and sweat and dust and strives valiantly and again and again. And I love that quote. It changed the way I felt. And what else it did to me, and Brené Brown pointed this out in her book, Daring Greatly, Theodore Roosevelt, and this quote is that if somebody is not in the arena with you, I don't care about their criticism. I really don't. And I know that comes across wrong, but if somebody that's not in the arena has something good to say or something to say that I can improve on, I want to hear it.
Yes.
But if they're just throwing rocks and throwing stones and they're not in the arena with me, trying to get things done, trying to make things better, then I really don't have time for your criticism. Yeah. And I'm not going to let it weigh on me anymore. And I learned that from Brené Brown and Theodore Roosevelt from that quote of get in there. Let's go.
Yeah.
Be with me side by side. And then and let's try to make things better. But if you're just going to throw rocks from the cheap seats, I don't care what you got to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, are we problem solvers or are we just problem finders? I think Frank Viscuso said that. So that's a good point. Get in the arena with me. Let's help solve the problem. Let's help make this place better together versus throwing stones. I like that. How does one measure leadership?
Well, I think a couple ways. First,
I know I threw that out there.
No, that's a good one. I like it. I like thinking. I mean, this one really made me think because you can't. It's difficult to measure, right?
Yes.
It's easy to measure whether we're getting an effective firefighting response force in 8 minutes or less, right? It's easy to measure that. We can time how quick we pull our pre-connect and how we ladder. We can measure those things. We have performance standards. How do we really know? I think it goes back to the influence. Are we influencing others? Do we have people following us and following our direction and where we're headed? I believe to have a healthy fire department or whether you're outside of the fire service, you have to have a great executive team. The leader needs to make a healthy executive team that is acting on their vision and following through, that can question them, that can disagree and commit, like I said, with the leader. And then the leader can step away. So I like Brunicini used to say, if a fire chief better have a low handicap, then you know it's a good fire chief. And he didn't even golf. But his point was, as a fire chief, we need to surround ourselves with great people. Yes. And we need to let them do their job.
Yeah.
And his point was that then the fire chief can have a low handicap because he's golfed a lot. So I think that's important. It's my job to face outward and work with, you know, mayor, council, county commissioners, senators, representatives, all the elected officials, the community and Rotary and all those things. And that's another problem we should talk about, is trying to keep my foot outside and inside. But that's my job, and to create a great team and then let them do their job and support them, help them. Is my job. So how do I know that I'm being effective? Is that I have them following that vision, that they're supportive, that they're on, that we have no silos within our department. I don't allow silos.
Oh, so I love that. You went right into my next talking piece. Here is a non-negotiable item for Chief Doan is not allowing silos. We're a team at every level.
Yeah.
And silos are not allowed. So talk about the silos, obviously how prevalent they are, how detrimental they can be. But run with the no silos concept.
No silos. And it's very hard. I deal with it every day. Even as great as our department is and as great as the culture is, we're divided into divisions, right? We got logistics and operations and prevention. Yep. And so we naturally divide ourselves into these divisions and these silos. And then I expect everybody to work as a team.
Yeah.
And it's hard. We try to give them their budget and their area of responsibility and say, go, and we trust you. But I expect them to think of it as a team. And so logistics right now, lots of divisions have said they need some more resources recently, and we only have so much. And so I'm asking them to first look inward to, is there things that we're doing that we shouldn't be doing? Can we do things better? Then if they still have that need, then we're going to come together as a department and we're all going to talk about it. This is the first team. We're going to come together and maybe training needs a new person, and logistics needs a new person, and we need to put up another medic unit, we're all going to come together and we're going to decide it together. Yeah. Right. Yep. Because when we have no silos, then you have logistics saying, you know what? I think training needs it more than I do.
Yep.
Then we know we've won, because if training continues to fight for that and logistics keeps fighting and operations, and we never get there, when they start saying, you know what, I think that other division needs it more than I do, because we're a team, we're a fire department, we're one department, then I know those silos have been broken down.
So hard to get there. I was going to say, yeah, very hard to get there, but it requires a lot of communication, good communication, obviously relationship building, trust. Sounds like all the above, right? It's not just about me and what I need, but it's about the we, what do we need kind of thing as a whole.
It's funny that you just said me or we, because I told somebody the other day, I had somebody in EMS say, am I allowed to spend all of my budget? And I said, if you have a me budget, the answer is yes, either way. I trust you. A me budget is I'm going to spend my entire budget. A we budget is, do I really need this? And could somebody else, is there another area I know that training needs X, Y, or Z? And we come back and say, you know what? I would like to buy this thing, but does that, somebody else have a higher need than this? Wow. That's a we budget, right? That's so I say, let's get away from a me budget.
That's tough. Let's go to a we budget. Yeah. I love the concept, but that is hard, isn't it? I mean, to know that, because every department, especially nowadays in the fire service, right? Budget is never... Budgets are always difficult in the fire mm-hmm. service, regardless of the state of the economy, the state of anything, really. But going from what you said, every division has needs. But to have the ability to say, you know what, this is a need, but another division might have a larger need. To willingly go out there and pause, we'll say, right? Like hold and say, let me find out if the team has a larger need than ours right now. Not discounting the need of ourselves, but it takes that humility. You know, you've talked about humility quite a bit to say, you know what, let's find out if this is the most responsible thing, because there could be a better use of this, right? That's hard.
It is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when I tell each, you know, the EMS chief or logistics chief, when they say, can I spend this? And I said, you are complete. I trust you completely. Yes. But ask yourself, is it the right thing to do for our department as a whole? And you need to look at your peers in the eye when you do spend it and they say, you did what? You're going to have to justify it to them, not to me. I trusted you with your budget and empowered you. But now I want you to look next door to your peer, and you're going to have to justify it to them when they are scraping and scrounging and prevention for $1,000 and you just spent $50,000 in something else, right?
But then also having the ability to go the other way to where you have the conversation of, yes, I understand this was a need for our division, we'll say, for the last 18 months. And we had the money, but we didn't purchase this for our division. We gave it, or we assisted in the purchase of something else in another division because there was a larger need. Having the ability to have that conversation with those same peers, look them in the eye and say, this is the reason why, and sticking up for that decision as well, and not being ashamed of, you know, being the bad guy, if you will, because you gave away, you quote unquote, gave away money to satisfy a smaller group of individuals versus the greater whole, I guess.
Yeah, that's a we budget. If you're thinking we and what's best for our department and our, you know, putting your community first, your department second, and your individual wants and needs last, then we're going to make the right decision. And I empower them. I'm not going to get, going to say yes or no.
Yeah, you're not going to get into the weeds of it. It's fully trust. Yeah, yeah.
Trust them.
The we budget. I like that. I'm going to adopt that. The we budget. As an emerging leader, Chief, what would you say is one of your biggest challenges early on as you were emerging as a leader, at not rank specific, but growing as a leader early in your career? What would you say is one of the biggest challenges? And then how did you navigate that?
I'd go back to kind of what I talked about earlier, is kind of that buddy to boss, and just, I mean, what do we love about the fire service? We love the kitchen table. We love the family atmosphere. We love that's why we love the fire service so much, is helping people and the brotherhood and sisterhood that we have. And then at each rank you go up, you start to lose that. And I struggled with that. I still struggle with it as fire chief because I'm alone. And I, like I said, I don't get invited to the shift parties or the union parties or those things. Right. And I'm still Dennis. I still want to be Dennis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I still want to be involved, and I'm still a human being that loves and cares and wants to be around people. And I'm in the fire service, but I don't get to be part of it.
Yeah.
And I struggled with it for a lot of years. I've come. I don't like it still.
Sure.
and my firefighters here in Gig Harbor do a really good job. The union invites me to their functions and the golf tournaments. And I just know when I need to leave.
Yeah.
I leave a little early because I see somebody's had a second beer and it's time for me to leave. Right. So I try to do that. So that was probably one of the hardest things, is just buddy to boss. I didn't do it well. And
how would you suggest, say a newer leader, right? Just say it was an individual newly promoted, we'll say, or someone early in their career, 5 years, 3 years, 8 years, we'll say, and is being challenged, if you will, with the buddy to boss relationship. How would you suggest, if you will, to build that awareness, if you will? Like you said, you understand when it's time to leave in certain situations. You understand when things are getting, you know, I'm overstepping here, got to step back. Because like you said, you know, friends, to go from friend to not enemy, but friend to the other side, right? From this shirt to white shirt, if you will, at any rank or transition. How would you suggest an individual build that self-awareness, but also get themselves up to speed so they cannot run into, I mean, I don't even want to say fail, because failing is a part of learning as well, but so they're able to navigate appropriately.
I'd say the best thing is to talk to somebody that is at that higher rank and spend some time with them and just ask them how they're navigating it, how they feel, what their culture is, and what they do. Because the firefighters want to see me. They want, you know, if I never go to things, that's not good.
Yeah.
But if I'm there partying into the late hours, that's probably not good either. So trying to find that balance.
Yeah.
I would just say, whatever rank you're at, if you're going to be a lieutenant or a captain or a battalion chief or assistant chief, that you talk to others at that rank and say, how are you navigating this right now? And ask them for a little advice at the next higher rank as you prepare to go there.
Perfect. Well, I heard you say the kitchen table a couple times already. So let's just go right there. How important, Chief? How influential, how important, how powerful is the firehouse kitchen table?
I really believe in the kitchen table. I was really excited to see that's the name of your podcast. And in fact, when I came to Gig Harbor, they didn't have kitchen tables. And I was like, what the world is going on here?
What'd they have?
They kind of had this counter in the center of by the stove, and they would kind of put the seats around it. So they had a place to eat.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, my first week here, I'm like, we need to buy kitchen tables. That's where this happens, man. Yeah. That's where you break bread. That's where brother and sisterhood happens. This is where relationships are built. We have to have kitchen tables. So we put kitchen tables in all the stations, and we passed an $80 million bond. It's one of the largest bonds ever in the state of Washington for a 5-station fire department.
Yeah.
And we're redoing our fire stations right now. And with everyone, I'm putting a kitchen table with their logo on it. I'm going to provide it. You know, this department is a younger department. I came from Boise that was started in the 1800s and became a paid department in 1902. Well, Gig Harbor started in 1944, right? And it's different. They don't have as much of that culture. So I'm bringing some of that here, some traditions and some history stuff and a kitchen table with their logo. And I think the firefighters are liking it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important. I think the kitchen table is the best place and the most dangerous too.
Agreed.
So again, this goes back to our culture. This goes back to our attitude. This goes back to the morale. This goes back to the rumor mill. What that kitchen table is the most important and the most influential place. And it can be the worst place too.
Yeah.
If we have some people there that don't have the best attitude or outlook. So I love the kitchen table. I love meals. I look back at my entire career. Some of the most fondest things I have are always breakfast, you know, on a Saturday where we're cooking and sitting around the kitchen table, or Thanksgiving with our families.
Agreed.
So I think it's really important.
We do have a couple of fire stations that do have a large counter area with chairs, right? Pull-up chairs kind of thing. Also with beautiful kitchen tables as well on the side, but I hadn't heard that. So that's talk about adding some pride, adding some tradition, adding some ownership and some just stuff to be proud of in the fire station. That's awesome. New kitchen tables. I love it. I
Yeah,
love
our
it.
department is very loving it. They're making their own, starting to make their own station logos. You know, we're working on kitchen tables. We started a tradition that we had in Boise, and I'm sure other departments have, where you, when you retire, you get to pin up your nameplate at the firehouse. And so we've just started some of that. They already had some great traditions here, but we're continuing to build on that. And I love history and tradition, so
Love it.
yeah.
Let's jump to rapid fire here, Chief. We talked about some books and quotes earlier. Let's keep it going. So, what's your favorite leadership book and why?
Ooh, I would start with a surprising one of Brené Brown's Daring Greatly. I
Very
think it
greatly.
hit me at a time that I really needed it and loved it. I don't know if it's fully a leadership book, but I love a book called Love Does by Bob Goff. I really like Patrick Lencioni, obviously. The Advantage is probably my favorite from Patrick Lencioni. I kind of the Bible of all the books. 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. The Excellent Dividend by Tom Peters.
Tom Peters, okay. A lot of
Yeah,
good ones. A lot of good ones.
I keep going, but
I know a couple of those, I will admit. I don't know all of those, but now
I can't
I'm
forget Jared Sergi's book.
okay. Jared Sergi, what's his book? And I don't know, we're gonna talk about Jared Sergi later. What's his book?
It's called No Nonsense Leadership. So
Oh, I
Jared
do know that.
Sergi, No Nonsense Leadership, just came out. I wrote the foreword to it, so that makes it even better.
I love
He's a
it.
Norfolk firefighter, captain, and really for the company officer and firefighters, I really think that is an excellent book. No
Okay.
Nonsense Leadership.
No nonsense leadership. Got it. Thank you for sharing. How about your quote, Chief? We talked quotes earlier. What is your favorite quote and why?
Yeah, I kind of already hit it. It's the Theodore
That's
Roosevelt
right.
one about the man in the arena. That one is one of my favorite about the critic
That's right. Yeah.
and just being vulnerable and that goes back to Brené Brown's book Daring Greatly, where she really leans into that, leans into criticism, leans into vulnerability and
Yes.
being a vulnerable leader. And I just dig that.
Since we're always growing, Chief, share a latest leadership lesson that you've learned.
Yeah, I'm really working on just shutting up, shut my mouth.
Me too.
You know, well, and here's this part of the leadership lesson with that at every rank you go, and the team you're leading, you have to be the last to speak. You cannot speak first. You have to speak last, and I struggle with it. So I just need to be quiet, and sometimes I get emotional about things. So here's the as a leader, if you are leading a meeting, the second you weigh in, you have stopped all discussion because there you're the leader. And so if you say, I think we ought to do X, that's what happens, right? So the leader needs to be quiet, needs to speak last. If not, don't speak at all. Let others weigh in. You're running a meeting, whether you're a lieutenant and you got your team, whether you're a battalion chief and you got your team, whether assistant chief, deputy chief, whatever rank you are, when you're there with your team, the leader always speaks last or not at all. And if you want true, healthy conflict and you want to hear people, you can't speak. And so I struggle with that a lot. What I do is I get a little emotional maybe, so I just start writing down. This is the trick that I use now. When things are happening, what I'm thinking, I just kind of write it down. And here's what I'm finding. The more I shut up and write it down, when it finally does become my turn to speak, I have more thoughtful. Other people have said a lot of it, and I've been able to think and hear what they have to say. And my it's less on emotion when I speak. So even at the Pierce County Fire Chiefs, let's say they're all my peers. When something comes up, if I'm the first to speak, it doesn't come out as well, and it's emotional. But if I sit there and I wait and I write it down and I think and I listen to other people and formulate a better opinion, usually what happens is they're like, well, Chief Doan, you haven't given your opinion. Now they're asking me. I have the floor. I've thought about it, and I can give a better answer at the time and a better, more thoughtful answer. So Whether if you're leading a team, you need to shut up, shut your mouth, listen, don't say a word. Let them wrestle with it. If you're part of a team, wait and be the last to speak, and you'll be more intelligent. Some people may not struggle with it like I do, but that's what I'm working on the most.
I love that. Thank you. That's powerful advice. If you were talking to a newer firefighter today, Chief, newer firefighter walked up to you, or a group of new firefighters walked up to you, and they were curious about becoming just a strong leader in their role, what's some advice you'd give them?
I would say, you know, this might be a little off. First, of course, just dig into it, be excellent at your craft and those things. But second, what I one, assume positive intent of others is really what I'd like to hammer home. And let me tell you a story about that. I remember it. I was at Station 5. I'm a brand new firefighter. I'm 21 years old. And of course, I know everything. And I'm saying how the chief this, the chief that, right? And I had my captain look at me. Doug Bauer was his name. And he goes, you know, Dennis, I don't understand this decision either. He goes, but here's what I do know, that those men and women are trying to do the best job they can. And they probably have more information than we do. So maybe we could just assume that they're just trying to do the best they can. And they're trying to do they have more information than us. And it goes both ways. As a fire chief, I have to assume best intent of my firefighters. So I'll give you an example. I had something come to me where a firefighter was, they asked for vacation. And if they couldn't get it, they said, put them down for sick leave. Well, what's your first, if you don't assume positive intent of others, what's the first thing you think?
Right.
You think they're abusing their sick leave, right?
Yeah.
So what happened, though, is we contacted the firefighter, and the firefighter said, my wife has cancer. I'm going to be using my sick leave a lot right now. So I put myself down for vacation and waiting. But if I don't get that slot, if it's not available, I have to be off. So put me down for sick leave.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that assuming best intent of our leaders, that they maybe we don't have the entire story. Maybe they know more. Maybe and just... I've never seen a group of chiefs sitting around going, how can I screw those firefighters today, right?
Right.
They're trying to do a good job at every rank, whether it be your lieutenant, your battalion chief, whatever rank, just assume best intent for just a moment that they're trying to do the best job they can. And chiefs, I want to give you the same advice of your people. Assume that they're always trying to do the best job they can, because I don't think there's one firefighter out there that is like, I want to be a crappy firefighter today.
Right. I agree. Right? I agree. No, you're so totally right.
Best intent of others.
Assume best intent of others. That's awesome. You probably covered all three of these, but I'll ask in case there's any addition to that, because you're right. You could apply that to any rank, any tenure, mm-hmm. any firefighter in the fire service or other industry as well. But we'll go here specifically if there's anything different. So you have a new emerging leader, came to your office, chief, newer company officer, may be aspiring. And they just needed advice, and you want to give them advice on being a strong leader. What would you tell them?
We get into this job for strategy and tactics, right? And fighting fire and cutting people out of cars, and it is vital. It's life and death. And we must be good at our craft. We have to be excellent at what we do, of our strategy and our tactics. And so, don't hear what I'm not saying. That is so important. It's life and death. But so is the other 98% of your actual job, right?
Agreed.
And what's the other 98%? It's the people skills. It's being kind. It's taking care of others. You know, as a fire chief, I get stopped, whether it be in Boise. I've been chief for 16 years, Boise and Gig Harbor. And every time I'm at Rotary or walking down the street, I get stopped and people tell me stories about the fire department. You guys, you responded to me. And what story did they tell me? Do they tell me how we pulled an 1¾-inch line to the front door with no kinks? The way we laddered the building to the second floor and we tied the halyard? Not once. Not once have I ever been told that we were excellent at our strategy and tactics. What am I told 100% of the time? How we treated them, how we took care of them, how we took the pictures off the wall, how we loved them and honored them and treated them with respect and kindness. That is what I get 100% of the time. Again, I say this over, don't hear what I'm not saying. We could pull the ceiling down on their white leather couch and we would get brownies the next day. that don't do that. But but it's how we treat people. And sometimes when I tell that story, I get well, Chief, you don't care about strategy and tactics. I couldn't be further from the truth. I built a training facility in Boise. I'm building one here in Gig Harbor. We're just going out to bid for a $20 million training facility. I think strategy and tactics are life and death, and we have to be excellent. But we also, there's 98% of our job, and that's the way we treat people.
Agreed. You hit that so well, and I'll just reemphasize it. We've had a few people say the same thing. In fact, Frank Viscuso, who's on the show, said similar to what you're saying. You got fires, right? Strategy and tactics. You got the emergency scenes. You got fires. Still the minority of what we do, not to take away from the importance of it, because it's absolutely important. But the majority of the time is the people fires, is the people skills, the human relations, the soft skills of the job. So how much time and hours of the day, weekly, quarterly, annually, are we putting into strategy and tactics? How many hours are we training intentionally, quarterly, monthly, yearly, on people skill development, or, you know, soft skill development? So I guess where you're going with is remember the 98% of the job is the people skills of the job, and do our best to develop those intentionally, not accidentally, is what I say. Mm-hmm. A bunch of chief officers walk into your room, chief officers from any level. You're giving some advice to continue their leadership journey, to continue to become strong leaders and develop as leaders. What would you tell them?
Yeah, I just spoke at the Washington Fire Chiefs Conference the other day, and it was hours long. But if you boil it down, the things that I wish I would have known 16 years ago as a 49-year-old fire chief versus the 56-year-old fire chief now, is that issues, that problems, grievances, things, they're going to come and go. In fact, we're never going to remember those things. We get so wound up about them sometimes as fire chief. And what I want to tell chiefs is just let it go, because the relationships you have with others is more important than any issue we will ever have. Nobody is ever going to remember what you said and did, but they are going to remember how you treated them. Mm-hmm. And if I look back on my 16 years as fire chiefs, the regrets that I have are not the things or the budget or what I purchased or didn't purchase or whatever that is. It's that when I didn't treat somebody with kindness. Yeah. What do we want people to say about us when we retire or when we die, right? That nobody's going to say anything about the strategy and the tactics and the engines and stuff. They're going to talk about how we treated them. True. And how we loved them and how we cared for them. And I just think that's just so important. And sometimes it's hard as a fire chief, because we think we're the leader and we got to make these decisions. And just if a new fire chief or new chief officer, I just say, dial it back, close your door, take a moment, and treat people with kindness. It's about love, really. Yeah. Everything comes down to love and how we love others, because love is at the root of everything, either the lack of it or having it. And I just want us to just, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Whatever it is right now.
Just, I love it.
It ain't that big a deal. Yeah. I promise you.
Yes. Well, and I'll reemphasize that again to the listeners, because it's so powerful. What you said is, it's customer service. I don't even want to say customer service 101, but it's customer service. It's customers remember not what you did, as they remember how you made them feel, right? And if you go above and beyond and make them feel great, make them feel worthy, make them feel appreciated, that's what they're going to remember tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, 10 years from now, not the strategy and tactics, like what you're saying. Make them feel appreciated, and that's the best job you can do.
You know, so many times when we talk about how we treat people, a lot of people talk about the golden rule. And the golden rule is treat others the way that we want to be treated. And at first that sounds good, right?
Yep.
But we got to change our mindset. Mm. We cannot do that. We need to go to the platinum rule. And the platinum rule, and it's hard, is to treat others the way they want to be treated. And that is a significant difference.
Yes.
Because I'm an old white guy. And, you know, whatever is different out there, a female or whatever, they don't want to be treated like an old white guy. They want to be treated like the way they are. And so, and it's hard, because sometimes we don't know that.
Agreed.
But we need to learn it, and we need to treat others the way they want to be treated. And that is a stark difference. And when we change our mind from treating the people the way we want to be treated, they want to be treated, we search it out, we find it, we learn from them, and then we ask them, and then we can do it.
Oh, I'm just going to stay here for a minute, Chief, because you opened it. But I love this piece, because I'm totally on board with what you said. Is there might be an individual, whether it be, it could be a demographic, it could be a culture, it could be a community, it could be just something, a group that's not represented. We should strive to be educated on how individuals would like to be treated, right? Because like you said, like the way I like to be treated could be vastly different than even just a friend of mine or even a colleague of mine, my brother, my sister, let alone, you know, a community member. But striving to find out how they'd like to be treated is what the Platinum Rule is all about, not just the, well, I'd like to be treated this way, so they should too. That's an old school rule. It's more or less, and I don't want to offend anybody, because there's Golden Rule is still a good rule, but we should step in a strive to reach that Platinum Rule. So I guess my question here, Chief, is how do we do that? How do firefighters get out there and learn more about how the community, if you will, that we serve would like to be treated? Because there's demographics and there's individuals that we're missing, right? There's communities that we don't know and understand yet. Yet we go into, say, their homes, and we need to strive to treat them how they'd want to be treated, but we don't know that yet. So what can we do?
That is difficult, and that is hard, but I think it's being in the community and being part of other communities and asking.
Yeah.
And just asking them, say, hey, I'm trying to learn. Help me to understand. I really like those words. Help me to understand.
Help
I think
me
it
to understand.
Takes some, I think it takes some, it opens up some dialogue when you say, help me to understand. I'm just trying to learn about that. Because when anybody wants to learn about somebody else and they say, hey, I'm just trying to learn. Can you help me to understand? Then it brings the defenses down. And I think then you're just having a conversation and you can learn from them when you ask them to help me understand this. And it depends what comes after this. You can make it offensive after that, but just help me understand this and how you would want to be treated in this situation so that I can learn and do the right thing and do the right thing in the future. So we have to be within in those communities and be at different community events. And so I like the way you put that too.
And I like that phrase you said, help me to understand, because you're right. That totally breaks down the barrier, the wall. It gets to a learning mindset, not just a tell me mindset kind of thing. It's I like that. Thank you. All right, Chief. So challenge all listeners today to start doing something or being something.
I want to talk a little bit about excellence. You know, so many times we think of excellence as something that we strive for someday. Like, I'm striving to be excellent, that it's a long-term strategy, that I hope to be excellent and I'm striving to be excellent someday. And I think that excellence is the ultimate short-term strategy, not a long-term strategy. Excellence is your next 5 minutes. Excellence is your next meeting. Excellence is your next conflict. Excellence is apologizing quickly, right? It's right now. You can choose to be excellence. And what other aspiration do we have if not excellence? And I think I'm going to be mediocre.
Sure.
And if we're not going to choose excellence, when are we going to choose it? And so that's kind of my challenge, is to sit back and think. So many times we're looking at it as a long-term strategy. I think it's a short-term strategy. I think you can make it. You're the next person you meet, the next training session you have, the next thing that happens, you can be excellent each and every time. That's our goal, to be that each and every day. And you know what? We're all going to falter, and we're going to lay our head on the pillow at night, and we're going to, man, I wasn't excellent. But you can forgive yourself.
Yeah.
You can ask for forgiveness. And the next day you can strive, you can do it again.
Yeah.
And I think choosing excellence right now in this moment, it should be our aspiration, and to do it. If not right now, then when? When
then
are we going to choose it?
If not now, when?
When?
I love it. And what I also love too is in every piece, right? Not just, it wasn't so vague where let's make today excellent. How about let's make every interaction, every call, every training event as an individual event and opportunity to be excellent?
Yeah, the people are watching 100% of what we do. It's a high bar. Well, excellence and perfection, but that's what the public expects of us, right? They called 911. There is no 912.
Yeah.
They called us. They pay millions of dollars for what we do each and every day. And we better be good for the amount of money that we cost our citizens. And there is no occupation in this world where we can knock on their door. Not only do they open the door, they allow us in their home, and they hand us their most valuable possession, their son, their daughter, their family member. They turn it over to it because of the uniform that we wear. There's nobody else that has that. We have that trust with that community, and we have to keep it. We have to be excellent, because if we lose that trust with our community, if we're not excellent 100% of the time, then we're going to lose that trust, and we can't do our job.
Make excellence a priority
yeah.
every day and everything. Thank you, Chief. All right. Leadership challenge. We're here. You as our challengee today, Chief, and we appreciate you coming on the show. And now you get to be the challenger. So the leadership challenge is where we ask our guests for the day to challenge another leader out there, someone who they believe would contribute and would be willing to share a message or philosophy here on the kitchen table. So is there an individual out there that you can think of that would be willing to share on the podcast in the future?
Yeah, I think Jared Sergi would be great. I love Captain Jared Sergi from Norfolk Fire Department. He and I met each other at the National Fire Academy and the Executive Fire Officer Program. He wrote the book, The No-Nonsense Leadership. He teaches right. leadership. I've had him out here to both Boise and to Gig Harbor for our officer academies. And not only is he a great speaker, I love his attitude. I love where he comes from. You know, there's so you can go out on the speaking tour and what most of them that get called, they're saying, oh, the white church don't know what they're doing, right? Or they get more clicks or whatever by controversy. And Jared is a lot about self, that it's up to you to be an excellent firefighter. There's nobody else. And I love his message, and he does a great job. So Jared Sergi would be great.
Awesome. Thank you for challenging Jared Sergi. And I will reach out to see if he'd be willing to take you up on your leadership challenge. Thank you, Chief. So how do we find Chief Doan in the future? I understand. So talk about Top Rung Leadership real quick.
Yeah.
And how do you still engage in speaking events? How do we find you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a company called Top Rung Leadership. And so I speak at conferences. And then I also work with Patrick Lencioni at the Table Group and Kappa Pro Leadership to teach the five dysfunctions of a team and create healthy teams. So I have gone in with chiefs and their key leaders multiple times and spent some time with them to teach them that five dysfunctions that Patrick Lencioni talks about. You can reach me. Easiest is probably ddoan@gigharborfire.org.
Awesome. So with that, Chief, thank you so much for being a guest today. How about this? Lasting leadership thoughts you want to leave the listeners with before we close on the kitchen table?
Yeah, I don't know how many of you have, everybody knows of Mr. Rogers, but there's a movie and a documentary out there by Mr. Rogers. And in his documentary, a lot of times he would end his talks with this. And he says that, who has helped you become the person that you are today? Because every person that's listening has had at least one person. And a lot of times many who have believed in you, who've loved you, you have not made it to where you are with a lot of investments from a lot of individuals and a lot of people. And I think just taking a moment to think about those who have helped you and loved you along the way is just really important. Some of them may be near you. They may be in the firehouse. Some may be far away. Some, like my grandfather, is in heaven. But wherever they are, they've loved you.
Yeah.
And they've encouraged you. And they've wanted what's best in life for you. And because of that, they're right inside you right now.
Yeah.
And if you just take just a moment to devote some thought to that person or those people who have invested in you and loved you along the way. And if you think about it, whoever you've been thinking of, imagine how grateful they would be to know that you thought of them during your quiet time.
Powerful.
And here's the key to everything. Strive to be someone that somebody else thinks of in their quiet time.
Wow. Powerful, Chief. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today to The Kitchen Table. We truly hope you found this time valuable, and we hope we've inspired you to take action, to lead, and to spread the leadership conversation. Until next time, be safe, be intentional, and stay curious.